If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Everyone, welcome to Women Patriots on ConservativeNationRadio.org. We are here to discuss the topics of the week, and you're free to feel free to join us by calling 718-305-7176. You got something to say, we want to hear about it. I think I'm going to start tonight with a little rant about, I have a lot of little rants because there's a lot going on in the news today. So, first of all, let's talk about the chaos that's going on in Egypt in the Middle East. And this is something that I've talked about in previous shows, even when we were the Lady Caniacs and before, because obviously with Ron Paul running in the election and preaching, we need to move our people from overseas and we need to get out of these wars and we need to let them be. And at that point in time, it was like, if you do that, we will have chaos. And even though President Obama has a different approach and is just being friendly to Islam with the misguided apprehension that Ron Paul also had that we created this hatred for America, these people have hated us from day one back in the 1700s. Anyway, using that approach, and what do we have in the Middle East? We have chaos. We have, and I'm glad the Muslim Brotherhood's being pushed out because they are terrorists. They are a terrorist organization. They are a terrorist organization supported by this current administration as they scramble to teach us that Islam is a religion of peace. Well, extreme Islam is not a religion of peace. The extreme Islam believe that they must kill the infidel. And that's what they do. They target the Christians. They target the Jews. They target America. And it has nothing to do what America has done. It has to do what they were taught by the Prophet Muhammad. And as we are seeing played out today, we are not safer in our world today because of Obama's policies. We are not freer today because of Obama's policies. And we have not created a better world because of Obama's policies. Now, yes, some people hate the United States. But in order to keep people in check, you need that strength and you need that threat to keep the extremist under control. And with that, we go into Benghazi, where we see the failure of the Middle Eastern policy on this administration's part and the failure to keep safe our Ambassador Chris Stevens when he repeatedly asked for help. Then Hillary Clinton ignored those cries for help. And today, our Secretary of State, John Kerry, reinstates all of the Benghazi officials that Clinton put on administrative leave. So my question to our President Obama and our State Department is, who is paying for the deaths of the four Americans in Benghazi? Because they haven't brought the terrorist in, and now they've cleared everybody in the State Department of any wrongdoing without questioning any of them, as Daryl Issa will point out. And they cleared Hillary Clinton because she did such a great job of destabilizing this entire region on the behalf of President Obama. So who paid? A man paid who, exercising his freedom of speech here in this country, made a video against the Prophet Muhammad and this religion of peace, then started uprisings in over 50 countries after this video was propagated by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and President Obama. This religion of peace but just don't say anything bad about their prophet, because if you do, you need to die. That is not a religion of peace, folks. That is a religion of hate. That is a religion of supremacy. And that is what extreme Islam is. And unfortunately, it's coming to our shores, and it's being pushed by this administration, by our military, and by our leaders in Congress. And we need to stand up and say no more. And with that, I'm going to bring in Barbara. By the way, this is Brenda Ward, and I'm back. Barbara, come join the show.
Welcome back.
Thank
you. I've missed you.
Yes, and I'm so glad you were here to take that for me. I was able to have a wonderful trip with my parents across the country, so I appreciate you taking the horn and running with the program while I was gone. So thank you for that.
My pleasure. My husband's glad you're back, too. I'm not as stressed.
Yeah. It's more fun when there's two of us. I'll give you that.
I know. And welcome all the guests that are in the chat room. If you want to log in and join the chat, you could scroll down a little bit where it says log in. You could log in with Facebook or Twitter and join the chat with us. Glad you're all here. The news hasn't changed much, Brenda, in the past 3 weeks that you've been gone. It's the same old crap.
Yeah.
We've got really, nothing changes if nothing changes, and that's exactly what's going on. The people are back. The IRS is still doing what they're doing. The NSA is still doing what they're doing, but only more so. They had made a mistake that came out on Friday, how their country code of 20 for Egypt accidentally turned into 202, which is the Washington, D.C. area code. So no wonder why everybody's flipping on us, because there's no doubt in my mind that the NSA has been listening to them. Look at what happened to everybody. And then all of a sudden things are brought out, swept under the carpet, and... I got to say this because I was kind of annoyed a little bit today. I was at work, I was popped up on Facebook that the Blaze does Blazecast. And I went in there, I was listening to him, and one of the guys was saying, well, why hasn't he been impeached yet? They really can't point anything back to him that he's done anything, all these little things go just so high, and it technically come from the president. Well, I have a list somewhere here in my pile of papers that there are more than a handful of things that this president has done that's unconstitutional and that are impeachable offenses. He's the leader of what's going on, but the things that actually really do hit to him and at him, the one that I can think of right off the top of my head is the recess appointees. It's already been determined by three different courts, Supreme Court, different circuits, by three of them, that his actions were unconstitutional. So right there is grounds for impeachment. And the other thing, he's bypassing Congress to do
impeachable offense, because the president does not make law.
Right. And, also with this Obamacare thing, we know that Justice Roberts rewrote it twice to make it a tax. And it's unconstitutional for the judges, the Supreme Court, or even the president to say it's a tax or to come up with a tax. That's unconstitutional. It's not their job. It's the job of the House of Representatives. It's right there in the Constitution.
Absolutely.
And you know, all these people that are doing, well, all the Congress, both the House and the Senate, you know, how they're rolling over and allowing these impeachable offenses. And I saw Ted Cruz had something posted about the reason why he's not up for impeachment is because they wouldn't have enough votes in the Senate. Well,
yeah.
You know what? That's ridiculous because these are impeachable offenses. These are unconstitutional laws that he's throwing at us. And we, the people, are making sound. Now, I don't know how much you know about overpasses for Obama's impeachment, but I'm real involved with that around my state. And let me tell you, what a blast we've had. we go out there and we get honked. People are honking. I actually had one lady stick her tongue out at me. It was hysterical. I was laughing so hard. And then, you know, we had people waving at us. We had one guy, one snot-nosed little brat. He was offering us change. I said, yeah, the only change we want is the country going back to where it's supposed to be.
Absolutely. And that's a great way to make your voice heard, too, Barbara.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, again, you know, we talked about this a little bit prior to the show. The police that are taking these couple of people, I think there were two arrests in Missouri, and last week, there was an arrest, in California. Their actions, the police actions, are unconstitutional. One of the guys here in North Carolina, he got a citation, and he's going to take it to court. He actually wants to go further. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that a lot of these policemen don't know the Constitution. The one that's been going around on the internet, the two guys in Missouri that got arrested, they asked, the one guy asked, well, they asked several times, why? What are we getting arrested for? What law are we breaking? And the cop said, well, he didn't answer. He said, well, I asked you to leave.
Yeah, that's, like I'm the ultimate authority.
but that's not the law. And
right.
this is what's getting ugly, and we the people are finally stepping up because for so long we have sat back and let this political correctness corrupt us, and we've allowed it, and this is the point that it's come to, and it's ugly. It's getting ugly because they're walking more and more and more on us. So anyway, that's my little rant for the moment, but I'm tired of it, and I know a lot of our listeners are really tired of it because we are fighting back. You know, some people think that I'm crazy. It's like, oh yeah, well, I heard somebody saying this earlier. You know, he's trying. You know, that was the only answer he was getting. I think it was from Herman Cain. The only answer he was getting is, I'm trying. It's like, well, he's had 5 years to try. The economy is still bad. People are still getting laid off. We're not making as much money. And yet they want to bring illegals in, which again is against the law. We have the Constitution. This constitutional lawyer, obviously, is not
absolutely
able to read through it.
Well, and I want to speak to this a little bit, Barbara, if I can, because you said it has to be, you know, they can't impeach him because of the Senate. And you're absolutely right. The House could bring the impeachment, but the Senate has to try it. And with all these progressive liberals and the progressive rhinos there in the office, they're not going to do it. This man has created much more treasonous activity than even Richard Nixon did.
Yeah.
And they haven't even brought the charges up. Nixon was, you know, he resigned before they, you know, actually impeachment trial. And, of course, Clinton lied and, you know, got through his impeachment. But, you know, they won't even bring it up.
He was impeached from the House.
Yes. But it never went to the trial part. So,
right.
Even though he lied under oath, and so he lost his lawyer's license. But unfortunately, there's too many of the progressive liberals there, and that's. But it is unconstitutional. What he's doing is unconstitutional. The president does not have those powers that he has usurped. And if you read it, and folks, I strongly recommend that you do. He's supposed to be with international affairs, and look at the crisis that's there. And what is he doing? Why this crisis is going on overseas? He's vacationing, and he's golfing. I mean, can we take this man seriously? How is he trying to fix anything? Seems to me like he's just using our money, all the while screaming that sequester is hurting, you know, the preschoolers, that 57,000 that are going to be affected by the sequester. Why he's spending millions of dollars flying all over the place.
Yep, it's those evil Republicans.
It's evil Republicans, and we do have a caller on the line at 6:03, so we're going to bring that caller live. But just a reminder, you're listening to Women Patriots on ConservativeNationRadio.org. Number to call is 718-305-7176. Let's see who we have.
Hello.
Hi, who's this? 6:03.
My name is Ed.
Well, hi, Ed. How are you?
Good, and I'm a conservative. I was encouraged by my son, who is involved with your talk radio, to listen in tonight. So I thought I'd call in, but I do want to share make a couple of major points. And you began to make them. And the problem is that the Republican Party today is split.
Yeah,
we have a Republican Party that's very close to the Democratic Party. They just want to keep themselves alive, then continue on and continue on. And then we have another part of the Republican Party that is conservative and believes in the Constitution of the United States to a very great degree. And so, for me, I'm very proud of those to stand with the Constitution. And if Obama is not being impeached, that means that you have Republicans that are not doing their job.
Exactly.
Right.
If they're not doing their job, we've got to vote them out of office. This is no different than the Tea Party formation 5 or 6 years ago. We've got to go to Washington. We've got to rally the troops. I'm willing to go. I'm just looking for where – I'm just not hearing any outrage out there other than folks like you and I shouting in the darkness. And the second part of my conversation has to do with your initial discussion of radical Islam. Radical Islam, I've spent a lot of time, I think I'm an educated guy, I follow news pretty much on a day-to-day basis and talk with a lot of folks, do a lot of reading on my own, independent research, and I found that Islam in particular, for those, if you follow the terror that's occurred in the United States, whether it was the bombing in Tanzania, the bombing in Kenya, the USS Cole, the first bombing in 1993, all of those, and including the bombing of 9/11, occurred by folks that came from Saudi Arabia. And those Muslims are known as Wahhabis. And that Wahhabi sect is the most radical portion of the Muslim religion. And if you look at terrorism, for example, the Boston bombings, the Boston bombers, one of them went to Russia. And while he was there, did you know that the Wahhabis have the Saudi Arabians spend money on parts of Russia where the people, where they're trying to convert people to being Muslims?
Yeah.
The training that was done in Russia to that young man, to the oldest one that died, the Sarnovs, was done by Wahhabis. And it was the Wahhabis that are the supreme bomb makers. They know how to make bombs. That's what they do. They create jihad. And so I have said, for example, NSA listens to us, and we'll probably listen to our phone conversation as we speak. And that's fine. But the problem is we already know who the terrorists are.
Right.
And they go all the way back to the Muslim Brotherhood. If you've done your homework, you know that the Muslim Brotherhood was founded through Egypt by a gentleman named Sayyid Qutb. Did that resonate with either of you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Sayyid Qutb was a professor here in the 50s. And he was invited to go out on dates and parks, and when he saw women not wearing veils and saw their ankles and their breasts and wearing shorts, he thought we were all poison and the devil. When he went back to Egypt, he was one of the founders of the Muslim Brotherhood, and the Muslim Brotherhood then said we should destroy the West. And so with that, the cycle continues, and it's basically through the largest portion of those that are radical are coming through the Arab Peninsula, in particular the Wahhabis. Does that resonate at all?
Thank you for that information for our listeners, Ed. You know, I Barbara may know more than I do about that. I just know that it's the extreme version, and I do know that a lot of it originates in Saudi Arabia. Which is scary, because we have given Saudi Arabia basically free passes to fly their diplomats in and out of the United States. So
that's
that can
true.
Be a little scary.
But as you both know, the everything that Obama does is for a show. For if he says he's going to go left to you, it means he's going to go right. If he says to you he's going to go up, he's going to go down. So there's nothing that comes out of Obama's mouth after the number of years he's been in office that I believe. So forget what Obama said. We need to get the Republican Party to stand its ground, to get them to get together. I am supportive of the Constitution. I talk with my senator up here in New Hampshire, Senator Ayotte, on a regular basis, and she doesn't seem to... this is all constitutional stuff, and I think she's way off base.
Right, absolutely. And if you have a chance to listen to more of our shows, Ed, you're right where we are. And there are movements across this country going on right now to upset some of these, what we so-called Republicans in their primaries, including Lindsey Graham and John McCain, who in this latest battle on the Constitution didn't stand with Rand Paul and Ted Cruz, but instead mocked them. And so you're absolutely right. We have a problem in Washington. And it's not just with the president. It's actually with all of our status quo establishment.
Absolutely. And so
people.
As Republicans, we've got to work hard and drive conservatism back into the Republican Party. Because if we can't do that, we're not going to win 2016 for sure. We may limp along and win something in 2014, but if we lose either one, you know, our goose is cooked.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was with Richard Burr. He actually has become, he's our senator here in North Carolina. We actually expected nothing different from Kay Hagan because she's a Dem and she's that liberal, I guess. I was going to be nasty, but I'm on air, so I have to kind of curb it a little bit. But Richard Burr had said that it's stupid to defund Obamacare. Well, Obamacare, I don't know if you heard a little earlier, Ed, when I was saying how Obamacare is unconstitutional, that it's not up to the Supreme Court judges or the president to give us taxes. And, you know, that's exactly what they did. They're imposing that on the United States citizens, and that's not legal. It's not their job.
Yeah, but when I'm driving home from work, I listen to the Mark Levin radio show.
Yeah,
I don't know whether either of you do too, but Mark has been spot on. His new book that's coming out on the Constitution and amendments to the Constitution is right on target. Because in all of this, what we're seeing is people aren't paying attention to the Constitution. Whether it's left or right, they're not following it. And it's important, I think, to reface the Constitution and reinvigorate the following of the Constitution. Because if we don't do that, they're just going to continue.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely
and
right.
Ed, I want thank you for calling us tonight, and I hope you'll continue to listen to the show. But you're absolutely right. We do need to be educating people about the Constitution, and we need to get back there. And with that being said, it's not going to be an easy process, as we've talked many times, because this has been going on for decades. And
right.
So, you know, we're going to have to take little bites at a time. But you're absolutely right. And it's going to start at the local level with your local senators, even your local politicians. So that's what we are organizing grassroots across the country. There's a lot of people out there. So where are you from?
I'm from New Hampshire. And I would encourage both of you to become a bit more educated on the connection between Saudi Arabia and Egypt. From what I'm hearing is that you guys are speaking the talk, but you don't have specifics. So I would encourage you to do homework on Wahhabis and on Saudi Arabia. Did you know that the king is withdrawing money from Egypt at this time, the king of Saudi Arabia? And the reason why is because the Egyptians are killing the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah.
The Muslim Brotherhood is part
and
parcel to the Saudi Arabians.
Right.
Although a lot of the Arab countries are supporting the Egyptian army, and actually Russia is too. So it's like,
if you've got oil money coming in from us into Saudi Arabia in the form of billions and billions of dollars, they've got a lot of money to spread around.
Right, right. And meanwhile, we're funding Egypt too. But actually, Ed, one of our listeners, she just asked whereabouts in New Hampshire you're from, because she's there too.
Okay. I'm in southern New Hampshire. Do you need to know the town I live in?
Well, she was just wondering if she actually knew you. Her name is Lady Michelle. That's what she goes by. So.
Lady Michelle. Okay. I don't know Lady Michelle.
Are you
I can be reached. I'll come back on your radio and talk some more. And if you like, I can set up some sort of a more formal agenda. I think I haven't got anything prepared in front of me, so I'm just talking off the top of my head.
You can go ahead, and my email address is Barbara.
Yep.
At conservativenationradio.org.
Yes, so we'd be happy to have you come on and talk to us some more and help educate us, because as we know, there's so many different topics going on that, we're not always up on the latest who's who, but we just know there's total chaos, and we know there's extremism going on. So.
Yeah, we want to step through this
and I hear
what you're saying when you say Obama did this and Obama did that, and nothing's doing anything about it. But I don't want to look at that necessarily, because I assume that he's doing bad. I want to find out why, who he's talked to, and get the real around this, circumvent what he says information and get at the truth. We all know, for example, that we're mightily upset over Benghazi. As you said earlier, we haven't done anything. I'm really not very happy with the FBI. I'm not happy with the CIA. But there really isn't any arm of government other than the military that I'm really happy with, because Obama seems to have his finger on them.
Yeah.
If you do bad, we're going to relocate you. If you do what I do, I'm going to promote you. That's his mechanism.
Yeah,
and it's not just him involved, Ed. There is a whole group behind him, and there's a whole organization behind Obama and this agenda. And so it isn't just the president, although he is most specifically our target because he's the most prevalent. But there's a lot more than just Obama, and I truly wonder if it isn't Valerie Jarrett who is making those decisions.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. Valerie Jarrett has been pulling the communist strings for Obama since before he came in office.
Yeah,
she was pulling strings for him back in Chicago.
Yep,
right. And we're dealing with Chicago politics now and Chicago thugs, and that's what a lot of people I don't think quite understand. So.
And she was the one that brought in Van Jones, She was the one that found him in California and recommended to Michelle and Barack, this wonderful young man who was a card-carrying communist.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
There's no doubt in my mind that she has a part to play in this.
Right.
Absolutely.
And of course, I have to go. Yeah, I'll let you go.
We have an author coming on. You might want to stay and listen to that. John Stevens coming to talk about the Sissification of America. So you might want to listen in on that. But we want to thank you for your call and taking time. And we'll get with Barbara, because we'd love to have some of this for our listeners and coming shows. So be sure and check it with her.
A message for your listeners: look up Wahhabi terrorism, and you'll get a pretty good sense of where terrorists are today.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ed, very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And we want to remind everybody that you are listening to Women Patriots on conservativenationradio.org. The number to call is 718-305-7176.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict: the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
Hello. Real women, real ladies, with real smart. You're listening to Women Patriots on Conservative Nation Radio. We do conservatism right.
And we're back with Women Patriots on conservativenationradio.org. And I want to thank that caller, Ed, for calling in and helping to educate us a little more on the specifics of who the terrorists are. And we do know who they are. And unfortunately, the administration is trying to downplay that, and he refuses to call them terrorists and identify them as terrorists. And that is part of what we're having a problem with now, and even in our military, where they are trying to be so politically correct. And brings into point even this million Muslim march going to go on September 11th. Now, how disrespectful is that? Because, they've been targeted. Let's feel the poor victims are the Muslims. Well, you know what? Speak out against your fellow Muslims who are killing people all over the world. And maybe, just maybe, we'll take you seriously. Okay, Barbara's going to introduce our guest because he is here in the studio. So, Barbara?
Okay.
To you.
Yeah. Oh, boy. The pressure. Oh!
No pressure. No pressure.
Okay, we've got John Stevens, who is the author of Sissification of America. And actually, he's won an award with that, too. John, tell us about that.
Well, thank you for having me on, Barbara and Brenda. I really consider it an honor very much. The book was published on September 1st, 2012, but it was interesting. I was running through my email, and I noticed on April 19th, which is Patriot Day, the reenactment of Lexington and Concord, that I'd received the 2013 award, First Place Gold Award, in the category of history with E-Lit Awards, which is electronic publishing. And I was just thrilled about that because this is my first book out of the chute, and I became an award-winning author on my first try. So that was quite an honor.
Excellent. It's actually a very good book, too.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I read it when it first came out, actually, John, and I wanted to go back and read it again, and I just hadn't had a chance, but I've been reading your blog. Yes, God is busy.
You sure?
Tell us a little bit about the book and what you mean by the Sissification of America. I do believe I kind of mentioned it earlier, how we Americans have allowed a lot of the political correctness. So
exactly
is basically where we're at today, and now we're at a point where we we've all had it, and more and more people are standing out, because it's really, it's not about race, it's not about money, it's not about anything, it's about America. We've lost it, we're losing it, we can't lose any more of it.
Precisely. We are losing our national identity and our virtues of exceptionalism. This is one of the reasons why I chose to write the book and began researching it in 2006. It was a six-year work in progress. I came at it from two perspectives. One, just a citizen who's concerned, a father of three daughters, husband. But the other perspective was from a public school teacher. I've been teaching now for almost three decades, and I've seen tremendous changes in our public schools. And I've been very frustrated with what I consider to be a 50-year decline in the virtues that made us great. You know, America has always been unique in that our virtues consisted, for example, of a spirit of independence, rugged individualism, a thriving work ethic, honesty and capitalism, competition for a while, for the majority of a republic, excellence in education, and, of course, our Judeo-Christian rectitude of impeccable character. And I research how, now it's over 50 years, how we've gradually seen the decline of these virtues in our society, in our government, in our schools, and even in terms of our population beginning to buy into this entitlement mentality on a level that we've never seen before. And it's tearing our nation apart. And so when I talk about the sophistication, I talk about how we're losing the vision that our founding fathers established for this nation, beginning with the Puritan Pilgrims, going all the way back to 1620. And I go through history and talk about how the New England way of the 1600s and how our nation was built on a solid foundation of these virtues that I just mentioned. And they were with us pretty much all the way up into the 1960s. And then when we saw the counterculture movement taking hold and people losing track of what's important in terms of their faith in God and other traditional values, we have gradually just seen it wane. It came back to us, in my opinion, through my research with Ronald Reagan. But since Ronald Reagan had left the presidency, it just seems like it's really gotten a lot, we're losing our vision, especially from Clinton on and so forth. But I'm really frightened as a nation. So what the book does is it shows how we came across these values, why we are who we are, and then I juxtapose that with current events in terms of what is happening. Now, when I say current events, I mean as of, I finished writing the book in about the fall of 2011, and then I was taking about a year going through the editing process. And as we know, a great deal has occurred since 2011. It's already 2013. And I've even changed my position somewhat even since I've written the book, especially in the area of public education. Just within the last couple of years, that there's been a huge leap in terms of what we're seeing going on that is truly scary and should be a red flag to a lot of parents. I enjoyed writing the book. I've received outstanding feedback from both conservatives and even some of my liberal friends that have read this. And I find that interesting, ladies, too, because the friends, for example, that have purchased the book and have read it that are progressive have even come to me and told me, you know what, John, I don't agree with everything in the book, but I'm going to tell you something. I agree with a great many points that you raise. And they've been honest with me, and they say the party, we're not the party that we used to be, referring to the Democratic Party. We have really changed, and I'm not. A lot of these people have said, I don't even recognize it. And I would ask them, well, why are you continue voting then? For example, like, why did you vote to reelect President Obama? And I was surprised to hear, well, we didn't. We abandoned it, So I think there's some element of an awakening, if you want, for lack of a better word, even occurring with some on the left, or unless they're on the far left, or maybe the Blue Dog Democrats perhaps are starting to rethink what's happening. But it's interesting. It really is. I touch upon all these various topics and kind of chronicle where how we came about, where we come from, and where we're going. And basically in the conclusion of the book, I talk about how we have two choices as a nation to make. We can either rekindle a city upon a hill, which is what we were founded upon in Boston of 1630, or we can eventually follow in the path of ancient Rome and go, you know, we can replicate that. And in my way of thinking, we have got to turn things around in 2014 and with the next presidential election in 2016. If we do not rise as conservatives and capture control of Congress and get a conservative president, and in my opinion, it's lost. We will have crossed that line in the sand, so to speak, where I fear that we won't get it back. I know that sounds a little defeatist, and I'm not quite there yet, but I think these are very pivotal elections because of the tyranny that is going on. I was listening early, you know, to your show, and you were talking about these poor people that were arrested in Missouri, you know, just simply for holding up an impeach Obama sign, not blocking traffic, not breaking a law, and that's just one. Or a poor young man from Australia, a baseball player, just gunned down in cold blood in revenge for the Trayvon Martin situation, and how we're starting to lose control and our society is just falling apart.
Yeah,
so I'd be happy to, go ahead. Definitely
is. Now, John, I got to ask you this, being a teacher in California.
Sure.
And the new law out there about transsexuals using either bathroom. How is that working in your school?
Well, it's for one thing, unfortunately, I did write a blog on this on Red Knuckle Politics about the madness of it. The law goes officially into effect in January of 2014. I went to my principal of the middle school where I taught because, I'm very, you know, our faculty at the beginning of the school year were up in arms about it. You know, just whether you were liberal or conservative or anything in between, they're not happy with it. And I asked the principal, I said, what are we going to do? And she said, here's the thing. She said, unless people, they are going to have to prove that they have a history of that, and there has to be some empirical documentation of that. They can't just use it as an excuse to enter a bathroom or whatever. But she said if the way I would handle it with any parent claiming, you know, that their child is transgender, I would call them into my office and say, you know, for really the benefit of your own child and the safety of your own child, let them use the bathroom in the office here rather than out where the general school population is. But I teach and live in a conservative area. Redlands, California, politically is quite conservative. And the school district I work for and have been employed with for almost three decades is conservative. That doesn't mean all the teachers are, certainly, but it's split about down the middle. Half of the teachers employed by our district are lean conservative, and the other half are progressive. So that's a very high percentage, probably similar to what we would find in Orange County, another very conservative county in Southern California. So we have a different mindset here. You know, I know California, you know, in the way it's portrayed, and it's true. I mean, our politics are governed by liberals, and that's how this law came about. But we have very strong areas of conservatism. The county I live in, San Bernardino, Riverside, counties are conservative and usually vote pretty conservative. San Diego County, Orange County. The only reason even why California always has been trending so liberal in the way that it has is because of Los Angeles and San Francisco. But if you were to look at a red and blue identification by county, the majority of the counties in the state are conservative. But you look at San Francisco, Los Angeles, and maybe some of the northern coastal counties that are blue, but it's fascinating. So
that actually, John, mimics the country's map. If you look at it, Illinois,
right,
it's Chicago that's blue. The rest of the state is red. You know, if you look at New York, you know, it's concentrated in even in some of the and even here in Indiana, you'll see the blue in Indianapolis, but you'll see the red in the counties. So that mimics. The only difference is that California doesn't split those huge electoral votes that they have.
No, they don't.
And so they always go to the Democrat, which brings up a whole other topic altogether. So just wanted to throw that out there because California kind of mimics that, and what we see nationwide, which kind of gives us our guidance to where we need to go to start actually reaching out to people, you know, that maybe are uninformed or have been taught a certain way that it's not necessarily a good way. Look at Detroit. It's bankrupt. Of course, that's the Republicans' fault, too, but we'll not go there.
But they haven't been a Republican there in how long?
I know. But, you know, all the bad Republicans who had money moved out, so it's their fault.
Yeah, right.
I mean, the logic is just not there. I think we should be able to reach these people if we could just get down to the level, you know, and talk to them one-on-one, which is good that your book that you shared with others, because it gets them thinking, you know, gets them thinking in the right way. So that's a good thing.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, that is one of the points of the book and why I'm working so hard to get the message out nationwide, because I think if I could recommend to all the listeners of your show and through the networking process and the social networking more than anything, is this, in my opinion, would be a must-read for any parent that, you know, not only the general population, but especially with children, to counter the leftist cycle babble that has gone run amok in this nation. And you talked earlier about how we've strayed from our Constitution. We sure have. And the book goes into the constitutional issues and the principles of the Constitution, federalism so far, and how we have strayed so far from it. Our founding fathers wouldn't even remotely recognize us. And I delve into that. I had a former student of mine who's now in college at Cal State Fullerton, and he purchased the book and read it. And now he's one of the biggest fans, and he said, it's because of you that I learned things for the very first time about our nation's history and the importance of how it's slipping away. And now he's one of my biggest fans, and he's getting other people to read it and purchase it. And it's all a matter of education. It is so embarrassing when, for example, Jesse Waters, I'm sure you've seen his segments on the O'Reilly Factor on Fox News, where he goes out and about and he interviews people. He especially loves to target the 18 to 30-year-old bunch. And one time he was out here in some beach here in Southern California, I can't remember exactly which one, but he had basically two questions for the people out there. And he said, could you at least identify the century that the American Revolution was fought and identify what country we fought that war with? And the vast, vast majority, I estimated about 70% of the respondents couldn't answer the questions correctly. They couldn't name England, and they couldn't even name the 18th century or even identify it in the 1700s, much less the Declaration of Independence in 1776. How humiliating, you know, that people from 18 to 30-year-olds couldn't even answer those questions. It's scary.
Yes. And
low-information voters.
And they just came out with a study on the how America is falling farther behind in education. I wonder why.
And now, John, what are they speaking of education, what's going on with the Common Core out there as well?
The state has adopted it, yeah. And we're just getting into the point where we're transitioning into it. What has interested me about it is I've looked on various samples, and I've been doing a lot of reading and looking at material, for example, Texas, and some states are pulling out of it and so forth. And I was shocked to find, for example, very, very specific curriculum that was, you know, pitting child against parent and scenarios and a variety of things which to me were just obvious, you know, part of the Obama administration. At least so far out here, much to my surprise, it hasn't gotten yet, at least anything that I've seen, that has been very really curriculum, not so much curriculum, but more style of teaching of critical thinking and higher level thinking, which I don't object to personally as a teacher. One of my largest complaints about No Child Left Behind over the past 12 years is that we have subjected our children to nothing but hundreds of thousands of factoids and bubbling in A, B, C, or D, you know, and testing it and making that the focus of our education rather than, all right, now, why do you believe what you believe? How did you come to that conclusion? Can you cite some evidence to back up your choice? You know what I'm saying? It's
right.
Just been A, B, C, or D. And, of course, the federal government had no business under the Republicans and George W. Bush of passing that monstrosity in the first place. It was unconstitutional, and I address this in my book with the help of Ted Kennedy. And then Obama's taking it one step further with the Common Core. So I have to be very honest with you, at least at this point, all we have been shown is that the testing is going to be computerized beginning next year, and its focus is on English, language, arts, and math. And what I am supposed to do, or what I'm being told, is that we're still using the textbook adoption in social studies, which is a subject I teach, American history. We're not adopting it. We're just using it, but I'm supposed to incorporate more writing and analytical analysis. For example, I just started a new year, so to do a Common Core lesson, what I'm going to be having the children do is read very thoroughly the Mayflower Compact, which we're starting at that point in history. They have to analyze it. And then they have to cite specific evidence of what the New England way, what it established with, you know, the Puritans and things like that, and begin to really go specifically to primary source documents. That's how we've been told to use it. Now, I'm waiting to see the shoe fall as to whether or not we're going to be subjected to the same nonsense that other states have been subjected to, because in the area of Common Core, ladies, there are states that are further ahead of us on this. You know what I'm saying? There are some states that have implemented this 2, 3, maybe even 4 years ago. I don't know the exact timetable. When I wrote my book, this wasn't even out nationwide. We were still very much involved with No Child Left Behind. So I don't even address it in my book, only because when it was published, or when I wrote the book, I should say, you know, I hadn't even heard of Common Core. So if it goes into the same level, which I'm sure it will, I don't see why it wouldn't, that other states are concerned with, you know, there is going to be a very palpable rebellion against that, especially in our conservative towns like Preblens or other places, because we have parents that will not tolerate data mining of their children or being told, you know, you can't reveal what you're learning in the classroom and all that nonsense.
Right. Are your students allowed to take their textbooks home?
Oh, yeah. They have a class set of all of them. Or, not a class set, excuse me. We have class sets in the classroom, and then they have books at home. So everything that we do, whether it be writing, whether it be workbook pages, whether it be projects or whatever, is all transparent. There's no secrecy in what we're doing. And that's why this has kind of surprised me nationwide, because I'm thinking, my goodness, you know, we sound much more conservative out here than the rest of the nation in terms of what our approach to education, you know, that, from that perspective. I'm not talking about this transgender nonsense. I'm just talking about the rest of this. Now, I'm not saying that we're not going to be hit by that. You know, I don't want to mislead the listeners. We may be headed down that road. All I'm saying is that as a teacher, I have not seen it yet. But you can bet dollars to donuts that if I do, I'll be one of the first teachers down at our school board. All right, folks, I'm not teaching this in the classroom.
I have a cousin up on Long Island, and she's a school teacher, and she said, you know, from what she's been posting and writing, is a lot of it started out different than what it actually is turning into, and they're realizing exactly what it is, and they're fighting it now tooth and nail.
Some states have pulled out.
Yeah, they have to do that with a big fight, though. Is that correct?
Oh, are you asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah, Texas had a big thing going on before they pulled out of their curriculum. But anytime, I guess it's probably safe to say, anytime that your student is not bringing home their textbooks or telling you what they're learning in school, the flag should be waving. For all parents out there, I think that's a good way to put it, because, you know, that says that something's not quite right.
The children see everything that we're showing, and we have not been asked to sign any kind of statement or affidavit saying that we're not. I wouldn't do it. I just, you know, there's no way that as a teacher that I would buy into that. And I'm going to tell you something else. There are a lot of teachers, and at least I can speak for this district that I teach in, would not countenance that kind of thing. But see, I'm really on the fence on this, because I'm wondering if, because of what has occurred elsewhere throughout the nation, they're taking a little bit more of a stealth approach to this in California. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
Then at some point, once we're in and we're fully, then they drop this other shoe and we're right in the same spot as the rest of the nation. I'm very hesitant about. I'll tell you why I object to it, though. I object to the premise of Common Core, because it comes and was initiated by Washington, D.C. Anybody that knows me and has read my book knows that I do not believe that the federal government has any role, constitutional role whatsoever, in the educational process.
Right.
I would defy any legal scholar or constitutional scholar at Harvard, even, or any Ivy League, to tell me where in Articles 1, 2, and 3 that any educational tasks are assigned to the legislative, the executive, or the judicial branches. I'm sorry, I can't find it. Yet the 10th Amendment clearly states that if it's not a function that is delegated to the federal government, then it is up to the states or the people. And guess who the people are? If the states, you know, that would be parents and homeschooling. You know, even within the state, you have that choice. But the federal government, they have no business doing this. And why? Well, I know why our states caved to this under the Johnson administration in 1965. It was because of the big carrot the federal government held out, and, you know, it's called money. You know, that famous song made by ABBA, money, 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 money. You know, so.
Yes, absolutely. And it is very frustrating. And that's how what we're all feeling now, and why we're doing things like this program, or like you felt compelled to write your book, is because this government is so far out of control, not just, you know, and it's all about the money. Whenever you have that kind of money concentrated in one place. And you're absolutely right. Education belongs at the state and local level and in the hands of the parents. And this is why we think a lot of voters who vote Democrat should be more on the conservative side, because, you know, we promote things like vouchers so that the parents can pick the schools.
Yes, I do bring that up. I bring out towards the end of Chapter 7, which is about education, I talk about how, even as a public school teacher, I've crossed over to the voucher school choice crowd, because we need to have those alternatives for parents. The vast majority of conservatives I know do not have the money to spend to send their children to private school. I don't care if it's private secular school or a Christian or Jewish. Who has an extra $5,000 or $6,000 or more laying around that they can afford to do that? Not the people I hobnob with. And so that would have to be made available in the form of a voucher type thing. But we should all have access to this. Isn't it ironic that the vast majority, you know, whether it be President Obama or the Democrats ruling over us from Washington, D.C., or even in some of our state legislatures, they send their children to private school. You know, they make nicey-nice with the teachers' unions and everything and tell us and supposedly spout what I call disingenuous support for public schools, yet they're not good enough for their own children, and yet they don't want to give the rest of the American people the same choice that they have. Now, I'm not saying they don't have a choice. If they want to enroll, I'm talking about liberals, their own children in private schools, all right, fine, that's their choice. But then don't tell the rest of the American people that can't afford it that they don't have the same choice. I just fundamentally disagree with that. I find it so hypocritical, you know, from that point of view. And I don't know. It's interesting. I will share this, though. I think also the American people have to take some responsibility for this, because when parents are abrogating their responsibilities and just ignoring what's going on, and one of my most recent blogs went into this, I believe it's on Red Knuckle Politics that I put this blog about education begets at home. For example, when parents, let's just set aside Common Core or even controversial topics for that might be taught just in general, reading, writing, history, science, whatever the case may be. When parents abdicate their responsibility and don't see to it that their children do their homework and study for their quizzes and tests, that's a great deal as to what has happened also in the decline of our education system. What is happening in our public school system, there's you know, my chapter spanks everybody in the country with regard
yeah.
to this because I have parent conferences and parents don't even have a clue as to what's going on at home. They don't know if their children do their work or they don't come to open houses. They just somehow think that it's 100% the teacher's responsibility. And I may be stepping on some toes out there, but I say that this is a responsibility of all of us. You know, mm-hmm. and think about this. I point out Chuck Schumer, this is in Chapter 7 on Every Child Left Behind, when he goes on CNN and talks about how we have three branches of the federal government, and he says we have the House of Representatives, we have the Senate, and the presidency. My God, this man is a senator in New York, and he thinks that the two branches of the legislative branch are now somehow two different branches. Well, what about the Supreme Court and the Circuit Court of Appeals? Are they some imaginary fourth branch? Or you have President Obama making statements when he was campaigning in Beaverton, Oregon, and way back in 2008 that he asked to visit 57 states, or even President
yeah.
George W. Bush making statements when he was campaigning in 2000. Never is the question to ask, is our children learning? And I'm thinking to myself, just from an educator's point of view, well, if we have to look to these folks as examples of what we're electing, I would have to agree. Our schools really are in decline. You know,
yes.
You know, can't we elect men and women? You know, we all make mistakes. I don't like to pretend or spout that we're all perfect. We're not. People will make mistakes, but people who can't speak proper English or politicians who don't have a basic understanding of geography and think that we have 57 states, or men and women who swear allegiance to the Constitution and they probably never even read it or have
right.
such an ignorant view. These things, ladies, just drive me crazy as a teacher. I just have to tell you. That's why even in the last chapter I say, well, we all have to take responsibility for this in terms of
right.
what's going on.
But, you know, this, and going, this goes back to Bush, this no child left behind. Now, my kids were in middle school, a couple of my kids, I have a variety, but they actually told my children, and this really irritated me because I have some that are kind of lazy and don't want to do their work, that they could not fail them, even if they didn't do their homework. And I'm like, even if that's true, why would you tell the kids that?
Because as a parent... That you know, my kids, and I'm grateful for it, because No Child Left Behind came out while my kids were a little later in school, and I'm so grateful it wasn't there, because my kids, both of my kids, they needed to be left back, because
yep.
that they just needed it. And I'll tell you what, my oldest daughter, that she was left back in second grade. It was the best thing that happened to her and her self-esteem.
Yes.
You know, there was a time when if you couldn't cut the mustard as young as like first and second, third grade, you were held back. And I remember my uncle, Chris, who's featured in Chapter 6, God rest his soul, he wrote about this during the Great Depression, where he talked about the school teachers of the Emerson School, the greatest school on the planet up in Great Falls, Montana, which kind of cracked me up. But he said, you know, those teachers were tough. They were all women, but, you know, tough ladies. If you couldn't meet their standards of what Ralph Waldo Emerson expected of self-independence and different things like that, you didn't pass from one grade to the other. And they didn't have to go through this whole process or a lawsuit or be overruled by a variety of people. They just said, no, I'm sorry, your son or daughter is going to repeat the third grade. Get ready, you know. And they were given the authority to do that. And
yeah.
what can I say? Oh, we can't do that now. And any time we do try and do that, I mean, we're stymied by and halted by the ACLU and every civil libertarian group under the sun, and federal law and state laws, that especially federal laws that say, you know, you can't say or do anything anymore to, you know, because they're so afraid that you're either being discriminatory or you might be hurting the self-esteem of a child or whatever. It just drives me crazy. That's why I'm going to be glad to be retiring here in, you know, 3 years. I about have.
Well, we're glad we're hearing this from California, that there are still those conservative teachers out there. Now, we have some callers, and we're going to try to bring them on, John, but they may be trolls. So I'll just warn you ahead of time. So we'll see. First, we have Jimmy. Jimmy, you are live and on the air with Women Patriots. You have a question for John?
I told while I was being screened the experience that I shared in elementary school, how this was during the first election of Obama. And I was actually ridiculed and made fun of a bit by the teacher and the students. I was saying why I wouldn't vote for him. And, you know, I mean, have you ever had something like that before? Like a child, have you ever come home from school and just say that, you know, I was made fun of for thinking this way? Or I was made fun of for saying facts?
As a parent in the school district that I work in and so forth, none of my daughters, the only time I can ever think about that where there was something similar, there was one experience with my oldest daughter when I guess she had a science teacher that was really into evolution. And when she expressed a viewpoint that, you know, an opposite viewpoint from coming from a Christian perspective, he didn't ridicule her. He just said, well, you know, that's your opinion, but it's out of date. That's the worst I saw. Of course, as a parent, I went down and dealt with that, you know, because, and I gave the principal and the assistant superintendent in the school district where I teach myself, I said, I'm sorry, that's unacceptable. But, you know, so there's just one instance. I'll share this with you. It was funny because last fall with my group of eighth graders, that are now in high school as freshmen, I took just an informal poll. I said, how many of you would be in favor of reelecting Barack Obama if you could vote, because they can't. They were only 14. Or how many of you would be voting for Mitt Romney if you could decide? You know that probably about anywhere from 75% of the kids raised their hands in favor of Mitt Romney. And it's important for everybody listening to know that 70 to 75% of the children in my classrooms are minorities.
Wow.
And that is what I observed, you know, and I mean, this is with kids not knowing my personal politics, because I never really try and say, you know, and in fact, I got that question. I said, who are you going to vote for, Mr. Stevens? And I said, I'm not going to tell you until the last day of school. Then if you're still interested, I will tell you. Because I don't think that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Here's how I teach
go ahead.
Well, I just believe that, you know, teachers shouldn't be pushing a political agenda, but I'll tell you how I do teach, I guess how I am teaching conservatism as a teacher. It's through making sure that my kids learn their Declaration of Independence, their Constitution, that they love it, that they say the Pledge of Allegiance every morning, that they love their, you know, I teach those values. And if that is shoving an ideology down their throats, then so be it. I see that as supposedly should be nonpartisan stuff, but I guess it isn't anymore.
Okay. Jimmy, did you have another question? Or we have another caller, so.
Well, that actually pretty much summed up. I mean, like, the only major thing that ever happened after that was the Shrek incident, where the teacher continued to ridicule me in a Shrek costume, started shoving Obama votes up my ass. They looked like onions.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. And we need less of that. So, okay, now we have George. George, you're on Hello? The air. Hi.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Sure. You have a question for John?
I saw that the author of the Sissification of America, I guess this would be John Stevens, he's here presently.
That's who's been talking, yes.
Well, I was curious what you would think of this new rise of feminism, sort of like on the internet, and how you think that may play a role in the sissification of Americans, certainly American males. I think that...
I want you to finish your question, make sure I
understand correctly. I was going to finish it with saying that, you know, I'm not stating that what I just said is fact, but it's simply something that I've observed that my generation, I'm currently 25 years old, and perhaps, you know, within 10 years under me, like 15 to 25-year-olds, that age demographic seems to be far less masculine than my father's age demographic, my grandfather's age demographic. And I think that largely is due to this sort of new rise of feminism that you see on the internet. I'm not sure exactly if you understand what I'm talking about. Internet feminism.
I address this. Well, I'm not sure I understand completely the internet feminization, but I do address the feminization of our schools and our nation's men and boys, especially in Chapter 6. And because there is empirical data out there that I included, it documents it very thoroughly that we indeed are feminizing our public schools. For example, I could talk about probably 2 hours on just this subject alone, but
You speak about empirical data. Do you think you can give me an example or two? Because it's something I'm particularly interested in.
No problems at all. I can read an example of an article that came out in 2000 called The War Against Boys. Ladies, do I have time to read a little bit of this?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
This is directly from my book. This is quoting... the feminizing of our nation's boys in schools. And it says, quote here, "For many years, women's groups have complained that boys benefit from a school system that favors them and is biased against girls. Schools shortchange girls, declares the American Association of University Women. But data from the U.S. Department of Education and from several recent university studies show, far from being shy and demoralized, today's girls outshine boys. They get better grades. They have higher educational aspirations. They follow more rigorous academic programs and participate in advanced placement classes at higher rates. And according to the National Center for Education Statistics, slightly more girls and boys enroll in high-level math and science courses. Girls, allegedly timorous and lacking in confidence, now outnumber boys in student government and honor societies, on school newspapers." And in debating clubs.
Anecdotally, just from my experience with college, I could just confirm what you just said entirely.
Yeah, it's documented. And it goes on to say that only in sports are boys ahead, but women's groups are targeting them with a vengeance as well. It says they have the data. Girls read more books. They outperform boys on tests for artistic and musical ability. More girls and boys study abroad. More join the Peace Corps. At the same time, more boys and girls are suspended from school. They're held back. More drop out. Boys are 3 times as likely to receive a diagnosis of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. More boys and girls are involved in crime, alcohol, and drugs and gangs. And it goes on and on.
May I say something quickly or sort of chime in on what you're saying there?
Sure.
And what sort of angers me is that you still hear the feminists. I don't want to generalize on all feminists here, but perhaps I should say the more radical feminists are arguing for equality, while I would argue that women have it better, at least contemporarily, in so many ways, at least in the United States. Would you agree with that point?
Yes, and the chapter goes on even before the report that I just read you, sir. It talks about why is this happening, and it's because of fatherless homes. Too many of our boys are growing up without, well, not only boys, but girls too, and it's having a terrible impact. I cite study after study after study in that chapter about how this is impacting our children. Our boys, a lot of times their role models are gangs in the streets because...
Yeah, like rap artists and things of that nature.
You know, turn on the TV. Men and boys are portrayed as doofuses. You know, we see commercials where they're flying around with their leotards and fairy wings and magic wands, advertising cleaning products and things of that nature. You would really enjoy my book from that perspective because
I'm actually quite interested in it. Now, more that you talk about it, I think, I've been thinking of these things that I've been telling you, just like, I don't know, as I'm walking down the street or on the train or something, but you're saying that you actually have empirical data to back it up, which interests me greatly. Your book is available on Amazon?
Yes, sir. There are two ways you could get it. Amazon.com. And you could type in the title and my name, the author. But I think an easier way to get it, quite honestly, it brings you to the same page, but much quicker than that. If you go to my website, can I go ahead and give
absolutely.
That a plug, ladies?
Yes, absolutely.
This is all lowercase letters. Do you have a pencil handy?
Right in front of my computer. So.
Oh, okay. It would be www.sissificationofamerica.com. All lower caps. And then it'll take you directly to my sissificationofamerica.com. And when you when it brings you to the website, all you have to do is click on the picture of the book, and you can order it either in print, on print or Kindle. You can get an ebook as well.
Oh, that's
and
great.
You know,
Kindle. I'll probably get it on that.
Yeah, that
if
way
I were
to
buy
to
a physical copy, do you think you could perhaps sign it for me?
Yeah, you'd have to send it to me.
I see.
Snail mail.
I was just joking there. But one final question. Are you familiar at all with this Brony movement? That's B-R-O-N-Y?
No, I've never heard of it.
Oh, wow. You're in for something if you were to take a look at it, because I'm going to be serious with you for a moment, and it's absolutely disgusting. I'll give you a brief synopsis, but basically there's this children's TV show. The target demographic is for 8-year-old little girls. It's called My Little Pony.
George,
have you
really
heard of it by any chance?
My
Little Pony, the show?
George,
yes.
George, where are we going with this?
Oh, I was mentioning how there's bronies who are middle-aged to young adult men who are huge fans of this My Little Pony show.
Okay.
That's dedicated to eight-year-old little girls. And you talk about the sissification of America, I think that's a prime example right there.
Well, that's pretty disgusting for adult men to be getting off watching little kids, girls shows. George, we really thank you so much for the call. And like John said, you can go to Sissification of America and get the book. We do have that we have to get.
Well,
yeah.
I just want
thank you
John
again. Thanks, George.
To check out the Brony, if he could. Because
okay,
I think you would be interested in that.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, George, for your call.
I've never heard of that. Yeah.
No, but... But on that point, you know, we as women see it, you know, because these feminists, which is not the whole group, but the radicals, they don't want equality. They want special, you know, and that's a problem in America. The white male, I believe, is one of the most discriminated against persons in America at this point in time. But there's a difference between equality and special. You know, if you can do the same thing that the guy can do, then okay. But if you can't do it, we don't lower levels because of your being a female. That is not equality.
I just say fatherless homes is having a devastating impact on our children. And I go into that quite a bit in that particular chapter because, you know, it's devastating not only on boys but girls as well when they grow up without a father. And we have got to turn that around because if we don't, that is one, that is a huge contributing factor to the decline of America.
Oh, I agree with that. And we have another caller. It's Jamel. So, Jamal, you're on the air. Do you have a question for John? Hi. Do you have a question for John?
No. Well, yes, sorry. Apologies. So I, you know, ordered your book off Amazon, and I've only managed to leaf through the first few pages. I haven't really managed to get past most of it yet. But yeah, it's quite an interesting read, especially from the outside kind of world point of view. I'm America kind of you know, most of the I'm pretty sure I can speak for the majority of the world when everybody says that America looks quite big and strong with its military, especially with its military actions in other countries. I mean, it doesn't look like you're being sissified at all. But you know, the other caller kind of piqued my interest when he mentioned bronies, and I mean, we don't get off to it. I think it should be mentioned. We don't get off to being to watching this program. It's a program that affects all audiences. It calls for peace and love between people. And I think that's a good message for anyone of any age to be believing in. You know, wouldn't you agree?
Well, I can't comment on the Brony, sir, only because I know nothing about it. I don't even know what it is. As far as our presence throughout the world, what country are you from, just out of curiosity?
I guess you could say I was born in Canada, and but my parents are from the Middle East. My parents are from a city on the outskirts of Dubai.
Oh, I see. Okay. I know that, for example, especially under the Obama administration, we have become the laughingstock of the world. When you start having our president being mocked and ridiculed in parliaments in Ireland or crowds where he initially drew at the Berlin Wall in literally the thousands and down to like something like 1,000 in his last presentation there, he's poked fun of. All you have to do is view a little bit of even his interaction with Vladimir Putin of Russia and the disdain that world leaders have for him. Now, our military, they're very strong in terms of our military might, but what good is it if you're no longer using that military in the best and most sound way to protect our friends and our allies? And, you know, President Obama, for example, wants to drastically reduce our Minuteman missiles. I was born and raised in Great Falls, Montana, which I talk quite about in this book. And he's talking about unilaterally eliminating thousands of our missiles, regardless of what Russia or China do. They're not going to be reducing theirs. But yet he wants to disarm our country. He's slashing our military budget. We have men and women that want to join our military but can't because there's no longer the money for them to join the Army, Marine, Navy. They're being turned down and being told by recruiters, I'm sorry, we have a quota. And, you know, we're only allowed to bring in so many people. And so from our perspective, we really do see our military being compromised significantly so that if we were needed or called upon to really use it in an effective way, I'm concerned about whether or not we would be able to meet that task, especially if there were two or three crises occurring simultaneously or something like that. But I do know that our president is not respected and much different in perception from European leaders, especially since he's been on all these apology tours and so forth during his administration. He's an embarrassment. He's an absolute embarrassment to this nation. And most of us, at least those of us on the conservative side, can hardly wait to see him leave office because our stature in the world has gone down significantly. Would you agree, ladies, in terms of your perception
with that? Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. This is the worst I've ever seen it. And I'm usually, you know, we were taught as children to respect the office of the presidency, so I always used to try to really hold my tongue. But in this instance, there have been so many wrongs done by this man and such a lack of respect for the office by this man that it's really, really hard not to be totally negative just of the things that he's doing to our country. So, well, thank you, Jamal, for calling in. We appreciate your questions.
As a final point, wouldn't you agree that that just because you have a what you could call an embarrassment for a leader, do you think that could reflect on your entire country? I mean, I know he was elected and he was put into office by your country, but it doesn't necessarily mean the majority of America, or especially if you say, as you say, he's had to perform many apology tours. It shows that even the American people do not agree with what he is doing. It shows that you are not the one and the same. I mean,
well, unfortunately, we have so many low information voters that are voting, and the Democrats buy them off with free phones, and they're not intelligent. I almost wish we could have a constitutional amendment that would state and get it passed by Congress and 75% of our states that would say that if you can't pass a test on basic American government, civics, history, and geography, I'm talking about voters now. If you can't do that, you shouldn't be allowed to vote. Now, I know that may sound radical, but I am tired of uneducated, low-information voters electing or having a voice in who governs us, because we're heading down a path of an entitlement mentality. We're getting away from the virtues that made this nation strong. We were a tougher people. We expected more of ourselves. We expected more of our children. We expected more of our leaders in Congress and even the United States Supreme Court. They've lost all sense of what their responsibility under the Constitution is, in Article 3 that governs their task. And I'm telling you that I think that we're going to see a remarkable awakening in 2014. My sense is, from the people I live and work with and the social networking that I'm very much involved with and the promotion of my book, there is a swell of people that are getting fed up with the tyranny of our federal government, whether it be because of the tragedy of Benghazi.
What
country are you from, Jamal?
As I said, I was born in Canada, so I have a Canadian citizenship, but
okay.
My parents are from the Middle East, just outside Dubai. So,
okay, so are you aware of how our electoral process is?
I am doing an international government and politics course at my local university. So,
okay.
I'd say I have a fair idea, but not as much as, say, somebody who actually lived in America.
Yeah.
Okay.
And part of the problem here, Jamal, is that the mainstream media, what we like to call the mainstream media, tries to make it look like all of us are in agreement with what Obama does and these things that he does are perfectly okay. And that's simply not the case. I mean, there's a reflection of the whole country. It's not accurately reflecting how a majority actually of Americans believe. So,
and also, the mainstream media does not report what's really going on. They only give a little bit about what goes on, and then they move on to something to blame somebody else for what's going on. As a matter of fact, in a little while, Karen Sigmund will be calling in. She is with she's the founder, actually, of Rage Against the Media, and she's going to be talking to us about a rally that they had. And the information that the media gives us, it distracts. It does not give us the truth. So the American people are not well informed as to what is going on in this country. So
it is okay, though, because, you know, when the fires of the almighty jihad come down upon your country, we will cleanse the souls of the American people. Allahu Akbar, Muhammad Jihad.
Thank you, Jamel. And that is why, you know, we have our little click button. Well, John,
yes,
I want to thank you so much for spending time with us this evening, and hopefully you've been able to help some of these callers with educating them a little bit on what's been going on. So,
My pleasure.
Really thank you. And we want to encourage anybody listening out there to get this book, of the Sissification of America, and you can get that by going to the sissificationofamerica.com website, and I've been posting that randomly throughout the night. Stand with us together as we try to bring America back to the shining city on the hill. So
yeah, onward and forward and carpe diem.
John,
okay.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate you having you on today.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and I'd be happy to come back sometime at your invitation. So,
Thank you.
Thank
Sounds
you very
like
much.
There's a lot of topics we could go into and do a full
I know, right?
We could.
But thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, ladies. Good evening.
All right. Bye. Okay, and we have a caller at 818. Barbara, do we think this might be? I don't know if this is
I
not.
I do think it is. I think it's Karen.
Okay.
It
Hello.
Is.
Well, hi,
hi.
Karen. How are
Hi,
you?
Karen.
It is Karen.
How are you?
I'm wonderful, thank you. How are you?
Oh, good. Please tell us all about your rally Saturday.
It was absolutely fantastic. It was the most fun. I'm still reeling from it. It was just tremendous. We had so many people helping out. The most amazing roster of speakers. I mean, I'm just flabbergasted. We had 12 speakers, each of whom brought something unique and very powerful to the cause. Kira Davis led it. Our master of ceremonies.
Kira.
Pardon me?
We love Kira.
Kira was absolutely, I mean, as soon as we have her video, it will go viral, I am sure. She was so eloquent, so impassioned, so clear, so enraged, and so focused. It was really outstanding. I'm so excited about that video coming out. She had spoken at our first one that we did last October and was outstanding then, and almost a year has gone by, and she just, wow, just knocked everybody's socks off. Our MC, our master of ceremonies, Tony Torres, who's local here, he's a fight announcer, among other things. He was exactly the most perfect MC we could have ever hoped for. I've known him for a while now, and he just so totally gets it. And it wasn't – he is so committed to this particular cause, and it was outstanding. So he didn't just, you know, announce people and move us along. He was impassioned and enraged and eloquent and just powerful and brought an energy to the event that was just – was fabulous. Dwight Schultz, who you may know from Star Trek, The Next Generation, and the A-Team, among many other shows. I think he also played Dr. Oppenheimer in Fat Man and Little Boy. I knew he would be great. I was on Glass Off Gang with him and will be again tomorrow. I knew how smart he is and how informed and passionate he is. He was just as great as I knew he would be. He was even greater, just absolutely outstanding. And he ran the gamut from funny to historically accurate to referring to a fabulous book to current events, and all the while being incredibly entertaining. It was just great. And that's just how we started, you know? I mean, it was amazing.
So did you have a good turnout then?
We had, you know, I mean, this is, I'm learning this about conservatives and Republicans. I guess I'll just say conservatives. Conservatives are generally committed to making sure that individuals are empowered. We are committed to living our own lives, leaving other people alone, taking care of our own families, and we come out in response to acute causes, to crises, and we come out to events prior to elections. And it's very hard. It's a really, you've got to be exceptionally committed to something to actually attend a rally that's not about a specific crisis.
Okay,
given
I got
that,
you.
We had about 100 people, which
that's
I
good.
Think is fabulous for Los Angeles for a non-election event, for what was, it really is a nonpartisan cause. You know, I've been very, very clear about that, and all of us who recognize this also see this as a nonpartisan cause. Just because they're lying to protect progressives and to hurt conservatives doesn't mean only conservatives are hurt. If your
right.
economy is tanking, if unemployment is going up, if your national security is being compromised, if government is eroding our personal liberties, all of us suffer from this. So I never saw this cause as only to advance a conservative agenda. I think this is the only way we can get a level playing field where people can judge one point of view against another point of view and come to our own conclusions. That only conservatives feel this, and this was a point that certainly I made and a number of us made, how weird that only conservatives come to an event such as this. Why is it liberals aren't waking up to the fact that being lied to isn't okay?
Yeah, you know? Because they do it themselves.
It's like you go to the store and on a box of Hostess cupcakes it says there's no calories. There's still calories.
Right.
You know, you've got false information. You're making decisions based on false information. The truth is still the truth.
Yeah.
Right.
So
right. At least
I heard you had a little incident. I don't know if you want to call it an incident, but DHS came to speak with you guys.
Yeah, this was very interesting. But before I go to that, I really would like to say thank you to all the speakers. I just talked about a couple of them, but we had many, many. David Spady, Eric Golub, Anne Marie Morell, Dr. Gina. I'm going to leave somebody out. I know it. Tony Katz.
I'll start saving now.
What?
I'll start saving now.
Yeah, start saving now, because we're, you know, one of the things that we did afterwards is, okay, how are we going to make the next one even better? So we're, you know, we're completely revving up. And we also had Andrew Marcus, who's director of Hating Breitbart, and Jim Hoft, who's a Gateway pundit. They came, and we had Kendra McGowan, who was our poet laureate. He read a fabulous poem, Evan Say It. Who did I leave out? I know I left somebody out. And my computer had crashed. I can't see it. Anyway, to everybody who was there, thank you. Just countless. Mark Eisler. I think that might be everybody. Absolutely outstanding.
Excellent.
Really just super great. And and Gary Graham, and we had a house band, The Blacklist. playing, why were they called the Blacklist? Because they conservative entertainers in Los Angeles can't, if they come out of the closet, they're really jeopardizing their livelihoods. And so they played as the Blacklist, and they were fabulous. So our incident, yeah, well, this was, you know, so interesting. We had a permit to have our rally at the federal building in Westwood. And they only allow one permit a day, and that was us. But down the street, along the sidewalk, and quite a distance away from us, was a pro-Morsi Egyptian rally, as it seemed. And there was, and they were a distance away, and it was fine, and they didn't interfere with us, except in that our sign, people with signs sort of got mixed up with their people with signs, so that was a little bit of an issue, but not really. At the end of our rally, we closed with music, and one of the DHS people said to me, he said, you know, this is, it's really kind of weird, because we have those people praying, and we have you guys playing. And I thought that he was sort of making a commentary on, isn't America an amazing place, you know? All these things are happening at the same time. They're praying, we're playing. What a wonderful world we live in. And I said, yeah. And he said, do you think you could maybe keep your music down while they're praying? So we were never, you know, just to be very clear, you know, I'm all about honesty in, you know, everything. They never ordered us, they never told us, and maybe if I had fought back it would have, you know, been a bigger issue. But his point was, they're trying to pray and we are interfering, and maybe it would be, you know, good of us to not interfere with their praying. And I get that. We have, you know, two groups exercising their First Amendment rights. We, ours of free speech, theirs of exercising their religion, and I'm all for that. So I would never deliberately interfere with their right to exercise their religion. But part of me wondered, if these were Christians, would he have said the same thing?
Oh,
what
hell
if this was a group on the corner praying for the souls of aborted children? My guess is nobody from DHS would have said a word to me, nor would they have gotten press coverage, nor, you know, would any noise have been made about it. It seems clear to most of us that the only religion whose right to expression is protected is Islam.
Right.
Christians, yes. Right?
They arrested a priest for praying in front of the White House. You know,
Christmas displays are taken down. The Christmas trees are now called winter trees. Christianity is being pounded down in and replaced by secularism, and yeah, and the only religion which is protected seems to be Islam. Scary. Up until that point, though, I have to say, DHS was fabulous. They were terrific to us. They were, you know, we communicated a lot during the course of the day. They were very interested in our cause and so on and so forth. And he never ordered us. I really do want to be clear about that. But he was trying to
accommodate
them and ask us to accommodate, where I know that no such accommodation would have been asked for if it had been Christians praying. Or Jews praying, or any other group praying besides Islam, and it was clear they were praying. I mean, they were on their prayer rugs, and we saw them come to their assembly with their prayer rugs and so on. So it was very clear what was going on. But you know, I don't feel we were infringed upon by it. It says more to me about our view of Islam versus other religions than about Islam versus what we were trying to do. But, you know, that right. may be just me. I tend to be a non-inflammatory type.
While you were doing that, Karen, we were doing the overpasses to for Obama's impeachment. And, you know, we were having a grand old time. But there were actually some people were getting harassed by the police, of course, because the police don't know the Constitution. But then shortly after, somebody, I don't even remember who it was, we get harassed, well, not personally, but for being on the sidewalk, some of the protesters, but it's okay for Muslim groups to take up the whole sidewalk in New York City in midday to pray.
Right.
There's something wrong with this.
Right, exactly. They're really, as you said, the accommodation being made for them and not for American patriots. It is bizarre. It's worse than bizarre. It's very disturbing. Very disturbing. And when we are on DHS watch lists and you can't say, the word Islam has been taken off of theirs, right? The IRS targets conservatives and Tea Party groups, and you know they don't care at all about any Islamic group.
We're wondering if we are still in America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
I know. It's extremely disheartening. It's not to mention very scary. These erosions. Yeah. You know, and again, it's not the conservatives are going to be hurt more than progressives when this kind of thing happens. Every American suffers if we wind up, you know, with creeping Sharia law. Every American suffers when our liberties are taken away. Everyone. Just because it's your side that's doing it doesn't mean you're not going to suffer. It's extraordinary how narrow-minded people are and how they simply do not understand what is happening. We did have another thing occur, though, at the rally. I don't know if you followed this, but Jim Hoft of Gateway Pundit is a favorite target of Wonkett, who is a mega liberal blogger. And she called on her little Wonkett followers to come to our protest, to our rally, and protest, I guess, against Jim Hoft, which is kind of weird. I mean, go to a thing because of one of our speakers. So she had her group. There were about four or five of them at the back there, and since we were very clear, all our opening speakers are Tony Torres, as I said, and I and Kira. Like I said, that this is not a conservative cause, that all of us suffer, and so on. And I didn't witness this myself, but somebody said after a couple speakers, they were actually starting to move forward a little bit and listen.
Okay.
Because our point was, why is it okay for you to be lied to? How is it that you accept being lied to? Don't you feel worthy of respect by the media? Why is it okay for you to be lied to? And I think they may have gotten that message. And the write-up afterwards said nothing about our cause. Nothing, zero. They had things to say about Jim Hoft. They had things to say about another one of our speakers and about some of the signs that referred to state-run media. They clearly didn't understand what our point was. But they did not argue against anything that we actually said. It was very interesting.
They were dark in their own way. That's how we're going to get to them, is one at a time. You know, with not the partisan politics, but facts, truth.
Well, facts. They also, the mainstream media, you know, they tell, from Obama. You know, Obama saying how we, the Tea Party groups, are the terrorists instead
right.
of the real terrorists.
Right.
Now, you know, and they're watching, you know, IRS has got us, you know, NSA, they're listening, and all this other stuff that they're doing to us. And we are the Americans that, and the media, you know, and I know your cause, I love your cause, I like to play in your cause too. they continue to lie and tell people. So, you know, it's really hard for people to sit to think
right.
that it's not true, because when my sister-in-law found out I was a member of the Tea Party, she was aghast.
Right.
She was like, oh, my God, you're a Tea Party member.
Right.
Like, yeah, and your point being, I mean, you've known me for, you're married to my brother 25 years. Am I different? No.
Right, exactly. And that's why we really do have to come out of the closet and not be sort of ashamed. So many people, certainly here in California, feel that they have to stay in the closet because their friends and family won't like them anymore. But if they liked us before, they should continue to like us, and it should change their minds about how horrible the Tea Party is and Republicans are and so on, because they did like us before. But I am pretty convinced. But, yeah, it's a hard thing to do to
yeah.
come out.
Well, you know what, Karen? I think 100 people in Los Angeles is an amazing number to have at your rally. And I think it's great what you're doing. And
thank you.
We'd love to hear the reports of how you're doing that, because that's how we're going to win this war. You know, that's how we're going to win for America, is to just keep getting the message out there. So thank you for all that you do.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I hope to see
Karen.
You next time.
Thank you, Karen.
Oh, we can hope. I missed
yes.
by a couple of weeks. So.
All right.
Thanks, Karen.
Yep. Bye-bye.
And that was Karen Sigmund of Rage Against the Media giving us an update on a rally she had out in Los Angeles just this past August 17th, I believe it was. And
yeah.
Had some great lineup of speakers there. And I maybe actually got some people to actually listen to what we were saying, so what we have been saying.
I know, right?
So. All righty, and I think we have Duke on the line here.
I
so
think you're right.
Hello.
Good evening, ladies.
Good evening.
Hi,
how are you?
I'm doing just fine. How are you doing?
Good, thank
you.
We're
doing all right.
Well, I am happy to report that tomorrow night on Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com at 7 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, my lifelong friend Craig Shields will be joining me. Craig is a best-selling author and is the editor of a very popular website called Two Green Energy. Craig and I have what I think I could say, and put this as charitably as possible, divergent views on environmental issues. Let's put it that way. Craig
okay.
is a real big alternative energy guy. He's written a couple of best-selling books about the subject. He's got another one coming out very soon. And, you know, I'm the kind of guy that I believe the market should decide what fuels are used and when and why and how. And Craig kind of believes that that's something that government ought to be deciding.
Ah.
But anyway, he and I will... Yeah, we'll be talking
That'll
about
that.
That'll
be an interesting
bit,
show.
Well, it so. Should be. Craig and I have been friends for 40 years now, and he is a particularly bright guy. He's been dramatically successful, and I'm very glad to be able to have him on the air. Now, the other thing that we're going to talk about is this absolutely horrible thing that is supposed to be happening in Washington, D.C., in about 4 weeks, that is called the Million Muslim March. And I've got to be honest with you, for them to be doing this on September 11th, that is just rubbing salt into the wounds
Yeah.
And it is insulting. It is a provocation. It is deliberately insulting. And the American people need to basically flood Washington, D.C. on that day. And if you see anybody wearing one of those shrouds or one of those silly hats that they have, don't give them change for a dollar. And we need to do something about this. And I'm talking with a whole bunch of different people about organizing something as a serious and major counter demonstration to these people, with ultimately the goal of essentially ejecting them from the nation's capital, whether they like it or not. And
well,
if the American people stand for this, then I don't know what else to tell you.
There's a motorcycle group going.
Yeah, those guys, generally speaking, I've noticed that people that ride large Harley Davidsons that are very loud and who wear black leather jackets and dirty blue jeans and, you know, a lot of beards,
what
teeth
missing. What are you saying there, buddy?
You know, a tattoo that says born to
you.
Be executed.
I know he's talking about me.
Those guys don't mess around. You know, they don't mess around. And I don't think that they're going to stand for it. And I don't think any of the American people should either. So,
yes,
it
we
should
need to
be a
make
lively
sure we
evening.
Maybe have a remembrance, too, with some of those counter groups going on about the victims that died, the innocent people. We need to be reminded.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah,
it's
and at the end of the day, ultimately, we really didn't do anything about it, and it is just absolutely awful, but that's water under the bridge at this point, so we'll see what happens, but I look forward to hearing from everybody tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, Radio Free America here on conservativenationmedia.com. Be there or be square, whatever that means.
Absolutely. That's
right.
Wonderful. Thanks, Duke.
Thank you.
That sounds like a great show.
Lady.
All right. Thank you.
Too.
Bye-bye. Well, it's been an interesting show. We want to thank everybody who did tune in. And we've been conservativenationradio.org, but we are, as Duke has just mentioned, going now becoming conservativenationmedia.com. We're in a transition, so not confuse anybody out there. The radio, the website is still at conservativenationradio.org until further notice. So, but that is a coming change, so you can be aware of that. And again, Radio Free America with Duke Brooks tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And we do have a lineup of shows going on. We have a new show coming on Thursday, not this week, I don't believe, but soon, so that we should have shows almost every day of the week.
Actually,
go ahead,
Bob. That show will be on the 5th,
August,
and that is
September. Yes.
The 5th of September, and it's going to, let's see, the left can't stand the Second Amendment and Americans' rights to keep and bear arms, and now there's something else they're sure to hate. It's the Second Amendment Forum on Conservative Nation Radio with Maxwell Winchester Roberts. We welcome Max and his decades of firearms and Second Amendment rights experience to Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, starting September 5th. The leftist administration in D.C. wants to disarm the American people, and Max won't let that happen. The Second Amendment Forum, coming in September, Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central on Conservative Nation Radio, where America always wins.
All right. Well, thanks, Barbara, for a great show. Thanks to our guests.
Thank you.
John Stevens with the Sissification of America book. Be sure and get it and read it. And thanks to Karen for joining us and giving us an update on that rally in Los Angeles. Taking it out with a song, we hope to see you next week right here on conservativenationmedia.com. 8 p.m. Eastern.
Hey, good girl, your head in the clouds. I've been
Night, Barbara.